Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies, and more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Bullen, lead analyst at Street Fight, and today we're going to take a different angle, and it's a bit of a bonus episode. So we have as guests a roundtable of leading thinkers from across the Street Fight newsroom and analyst pool, and each of them has brought a topic to the table that they've been examining, and this is really a chance to get a valuable breakdown of some of those impactful and hopefully strategically informative insights. So here's our discussion. To go around the horn for quick hellos and intros from our panel, we have Brandify VP of Product Damian Rawlinson. Damian, how are you?
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you.
Yes. We also have Street Fight Managing Editor Joe Zappa. How are you today, Joe?
Hi, Mike. Doing well. Glad to be here.
Nice. So let's get right into it. We got a lot to talk about. And our theme today, I should say, fitting for the season, is retail innovation. So Black Friday is 2 days away. It's that time of year where there's really a spotlight on retail innovation. There's a lot happening out there that we're all examining. So Damian, I'd like to start with you because Brandify recently held a webinar with some tips and tactics for retailers and marketers in the retail sector for this holiday season. So give us some of the kind of key takeaways from that exercise.
Sure. I'm going to actually try to give kind of a brief summary of the tactics that we covered in the webinar. And I'll also mention that there's a blog post up on the Brandify blog that covers each of these items in a little bit more detail. But basically what we're trying to do, you know, at Brandify, because we work with multi-location brand clients primarily and help them to get surfaced for, local search. What we try to do is provide tactics that will help them to differentiate themselves from the competition, especially during the holiday season when search traffic is at, you know, sort of its annual peak. And so the first of our tactics is to focus on your local landing pages with differentiation that, you know, the kind of things that we recommend today are turning your landing pages into an opportunity for engagement and even conversion a little bit more directly than perhaps we've done in the past, with things like integration with the Uber API so people can hail a ride directly to your store location by clicking straight through your local page. If you're a restaurant or that type of business, you can integrate with Uber Eats or Grubhub or Postmates to have people order delivery services directly from your local pages. And for any kind of vertical, there's some type of integration opportunity like that, whether it's the Instagram API to showcase a feed of your product photos, anything that will help to drive engagement, but also, you know, directly converting traffic from the local pages. We think there's a lot of opportunity there. Our second tactic is to make sure that your holiday hours are up to date. That's pretty straightforward. We tend to say that every year, but it's something that people need to make sure of, not only in their own web pages, but also on sites like Google, where you can set holiday hours in advance. And of course, Yelp, Facebook, and everywhere else where consumers are encountering your business. We have a few Google-specific recommendations. One of them is to promote your business with Google Posts. That's our tactic number three. Posts are some, you know, real estate that you can control within your Google listing. It's actually kind of like a free form of advertising. And it's been demonstrated that posts can really drive a lot of engagement. We've had clients who get click-through rates of up to about 4% on posts, which is pretty good, you know, considering the amount of traffic that Google listings tend to get around the holidays. So certainly encourage people to experiment with that. Fourth tactic is dressing up your Facebook pages for the holidays, both, using, holiday imagery and so on, but also making sure things like your call to action buttons and your messenger settings are properly oriented toward holiday communication and the types of traffic that you want to drive. In particular, there's some little known settings within Facebook Messenger where you can actually add a holiday greeting and automated suggested questions and so on that will help to sort of frame the holiday conversation for your customers. Fifth tactic is to make sure that your review response strategy is in place, that you're ready for the perhaps a little bit more stressful conversations that could be happening during the holidays or reviews that you might receive, and make sure that you're ready to respond to all of those reviews in a timely manner and maintain that professional voice that's so important for review response. The sixth one is to pay attention to frequently asked questions that may occur within your, especially Google question and answers section within your Google listings. Seventh tactic is checking to make sure that any of your recently opened, closed, or moved locations are properly represented in search. So that's something to make sure that you're double checking during this time of year. You certainly don't want to send people to the wrong address or to a location that's closed. You want to make sure that information is fully up to date. And then we also recommend that you you pay attention to what people are saying about you socially, not only by responding to reviews, but also perhaps using a social listening tool. We have some recommendations there to look at the content of those reviews and come up with things that your business might need to improve. Perhaps there's one significant improvement that you can make during the holiday season. And then finally, we have a little bit of information about advertising opportunities. In particular, we're very interested these days in Google's local inventory ads, which is a way that you can surface for product-specific searches. And also, it leads to an integration with your Google local listings, because Google has a feature called See What's in Store, where if you're running local inventory ads, if people find you through local search, they'll be linked over to a list of your products. And so that's a really nice integration between product search and the sort of more local orientation. And then finally, 10th tactic, I know I've gone through these kind of quickly, but the 10th one is to focus on location-aware advertising. And that's kind of a big topic in itself, but we have several tactics to recommend just to make sure that you're creating your advertising with a local layer included. One of the ways to do that is to make sure that any display advertising that includes a coupon or anything that can be brought into the store is integrated with your Apple Wallet or Google Wallet, so that people have that coupon on their phone and can perhaps be reminded when they're near the store that the coupon is available for them to use. So that's again a lot of content that I've run through kind of quickly. But if you do go over to the Brandify blog, you'll see it explained in a little bit more detail.
Great. Yeah, that's great job kind of getting through all those in a substantive manner, and a lot of great actionable stuff there. A few things jump out. You know, some of that is like blocking and tackling stuff, you know, hours of operation. Some of those things that just constantly need to be reminded and are lower hanging fruit. A few other things I think are really cool, but yet probably on the other end of the spectrum in terms of complexity, which is some of those kind of functional integrations like Uber. And I love that because it really just empowers a lot of retailers with functionality that they didn't have before through things like, you know, APIs for this range of functions, everything from Uber to anything that really plugs into their store experience or getting to the store. Now, what would you say to, you know, I guess retailers that are kind of scared away by terms like API? Is that getting easier, or is it a non-issue in that a lot of brands and retailers have that technical aptitude in terms of their internal resources?
Well, certainly if you're working with a vendor who's, you know, helping to build and maintain your store locator and local pages for you, then they should be able to handle the technical requirements of those types of integrations. But really the answer to your question is it's becoming easier and easier to plug and play these types of APIs and get them up and running very quickly. So it's really not as daunting as it may have been in the past. In fact, I would say that some of those integrations are, you know, they belong within the category of quick and easy things that you can do to create engagement, even if you haven't, you know, previously included them in your holiday marketing plan. It's something that's actually pretty simple to implement.
Yeah, great. And actually, I should say, before we go to Joe, you mentioned GMB and utilizing some of those newer tools like Posts. I saw yesterday Google has launched a new app, a business-facing app that essentially is a is an easier tie-in to GMB in terms of being able to do things like update hours of operation, and you know, create posts or update posts and things like that. That, you know, frankly, they're trying to compete with the ease with which Facebook has allowed people with Facebook pages to be able to update those as a business. So that's now a business-facing app with new features, which I thought was interesting, and we'll be covering more on Street Fight in the coming days.
Sorry to interrupt.
Go for it.
The app has actually been around for a
while. It has, but there are new... Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, that's right. The news, and it is significant news, is that it's been updated with a lot of additional features that weren't there before. So it's definitely something that people should check out.
Mm-hmm. So Joe, let's go to you next. You're definitely looking at several different items and have your finger on the pulse of the landscape of news and product launches, and you're hearing a lot of inbound news items, and we're publishing a lot of those on Street Fight. So what's sticking out for you most, and are there any kind of notable threads or trends you're detecting this year?
Yeah, sounds great. So I'll talk about a few things we've had on Street Fight recently. Maybe we can go back to this, Damien, in regards to the multi-location brand side of things. We had a post recently on Street Fight that was looking at a session from Brandify's Summit in September, given by Stephen Chen, who's a senior product manager of Google My Business. And he was talking about the importance of a hyper-local approach where multi-location brands empower franchise owners to do a lot of the work Damien was talking about. So I'd kind of second Mike's curiosity about when you're going over with multi-location brands how to have a good location-based approach for the holidays. Is that generally a sort of centralized thing that's happening, or are they delegating, or is it a vendor coming in and helping them out? Maybe we can go back to that. But I'm also going to talk about a lot of holiday marketing things. So three themes, basically, from our holiday coverage at Street Fight. One is the small business side of the equation. So Street Fight does location-based marketing for big brands, but also small businesses. We had a story from reputation in CRM small business firm Womply about how the holidays break down for small businesses. Small Business Saturday, I don't know how much that is a thing. That article actually sort of called into question whether it is a thing. Womply found that Small Business Saturday is only the 22nd best revenue day of the year. And that average purchase prices actually go down on that day. So the sort of clear analytical angle there is, are sales on certain holidays or, you know, made up holidays so generous that the purchase prices are going down too much, and then the revenue jump isn't as big as it could be, and sort of where the sweet spot is with holiday deals. Another thing is mobile. So from Causal IQ, we have that smartphones will account for nearly 70% of all website visits during the holiday shopping season. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, further speaks to some of the things Damien was saying and the importance of the mobile angle when brands or small businesses are keeping everything up to date and looking good.
Joe, do you think some of those are happening in store when people are out shopping? That's probably an open-ended question. I'm not sure if the data indicates that, but it's an interesting thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure it does, and I'm sure you can talk a little bit more about that. That'll be a nice point of consistency also with the AR stuff.
Totally.
This was another really interesting thing that the data from Causal IQ does speak to, is that PCs grow in popularity at night. So in other words, it's all throughout the day when people are at their desks or moving around that they are, you know, checking their phone, going on Amazon or whatever to look at products. And then it's at night, just when they're at home, probably, that PC finally retakes center stage. So that's an interesting location bit.
Yeah. I think increasingly people need to sort of, consider that device portability or transferring your research on products and services from one device to another is just a natural thing that people do. To actually loop back to the phone again, you mentioned Stephen Chen's presentation, Stephen from Google at the Brandify Summit. He had some interesting stats that are, I think, relatively recent on Google's part. They're saying that, in particular for chains, they see more than 100 million mobile queries for chain information every day, and is kind of instructive to look at what are people actually looking for. 33% of the users who are looking for chain information are specifically looking for hours of operation. So that kind of gets back to the point that you were making about sort of block and tackle tactics, Mike, because even though we may tend to overlook those details or think of them as not really impactful when it comes to marketing, in fact, that's the exact kind of information that people are looking for. They think of local search as a utility, right? And so they use it to find basic information. And if that basic information is correct, then you're going to, satisfy that customer. And if it's not, you'll lose them to your competitor.
And I bet increasingly, I don't have the data in front of me, but anecdotally speaking, a lot of hours of operation in terms of the checkpoint, in terms of the user touch point, is increasingly in the one box, or what's now more known these days as the knowledge panel in Google, where surfacing that from GMB shows it right on that first page, and that's really kind of become a canonical source for getting that information. Of course, it's spread out among other places, Yelp and other places, but do you have any view into that actually, Damien, the kind of where hours of operations are mostly consumed by searchers?
Well, I think that Google does get the lion's share of that kind of traffic, but it really depends on the use case, because all of those properties that we can sort of name off the top of our heads, most consumers also have, in mind when they search for things. And some people will prefer, to look for an auto mechanic or a retailer or a doctor by directly going to Yelp. And in that case, the hours on Yelp are going to be, preeminent in that consumer's mind.
Absolutely. So that's great. So let's move on to our last topic of the day. So I wrote last week about some of the integrations of augmented reality in retail. And as quick background, so we often have to remind people that about 90% of U.S. retail spending happens offline in physical stores, and that happens to the tune of about $3.4 trillion in U.S. spending. But about $2 trillion of that is influenced by mobile and online media like search. So it's the classic online to offline kind of consumer journey that we often talk about. But where AR comes in is that that's where it could really take the biggest bite, because when we're talking about that kind of online to offline journey, there's perhaps no better technology that aligns with that use case than one that literally blends the physical and the digital, as AR does. So the latest is that Walmart, in their app, they have a new feature that lets shoppers get informational overlays on items they point their phone at in the store. And that's everything from pricing to inventory and other just kind of in-aisle utilities. But in a broader sense, what this does is I think it kind of points out some of the benefits of AR in retail and its ability to kind of bring together the best of online and offline shopping. And that was kind of the topic of our article. So if you think about it, offline shopping, the benefits are like immediate gratification and up-close views, which is particularly valuable for things like TVs or things you want to see in person, larger items, no shipping, etc. Whereas online shopping, its advantages we all know of, it's more inventory and price competition and transparency and ability to filter by product attributes very dynamically, which you can't really do in a store aisle in a dynamic way. So AR can bring together those two things and bring some of those digital filtration features and things to store aisles. And you may be thinking like, yeah, that's, we've had this for a while. It's called showrooming. And that's true. And we think AR is really just kind of the next evolution, or it's showrooming on steroids. And one of the real kind of like hidden messages or takeaways there is that You know, about a decade ago, we started to see this divergence in retail success. And on one side were those that kind of fought mobile interaction in store. And those are like the Circuit Cities and the Toys R Us's of the world. And on the other side of that fence, you have those who really embraced it in very customer-centric ways. And those are the retailers today who are, you know, not only surviving but thriving, like beating quarterly estimates. You know, it's the Targets of the world who are really embracing things like, you know, in-store pickup and other just kind of like in-store utilities that are just very customer-centric. And we believe, bringing it back to AR, that that's really just the next evolution in that path. And it goes beyond AR. We see lots of things like, you know, cashierless stores and in-aisle payments were, you know, being pioneered by Amazon Go and others. And other things that I think are just going to really drive a wedge between like the winners and the losers in like retail's next era. So I think we're just going to see a continuation of that trend of like who embraces it versus who doesn't. And I think AR is going to be one of the major things on that list.
So Mike, I thought this column of yours was really fascinating, and I'm, you know, pretty interested in trying this out myself. So anybody can download the Walmart app and go into the store and use this new AR feature. Is that right?
It is. And I should also say that this is kind of like, it's kind of like a cousin of AR known as visual search. And that's where Google's driving hard at with Google Lens, where it's an overlay, but it's not an overlay where it's like a cartoon or entertainment based thing that's kind of jumping out behind a tree. That's usually how AR is thought of. This is more of a utility where I like to think of it as visual search, where you're performing a search, but instead of a search box, you're using the camera.
So you mentioned cashierless payments, and here's a question that I have. So I saw in the news recently that 7-Eleven is experimenting with cashierless payments at certain stores. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it sounded pretty exciting until I got to the part where in order to use it, you have to download the 7-Eleven
app. Yeah, their app, right.
But, you know, which makes sense. But, you know, as a shopper, it's like how much real estate am I going to give to different brands that I have to download their specific app in order to interact with whatever feature might be interesting to me. So I might do it for Walmart, but I might never do it for 7-Eleven. So, you know, the question that I have is, is this sort of thing really only going to take off when Apple releases the app that does this, or when someone releases one that works across multiple retailers? It feels like that might be a point at which the, you know, this type of interaction might really become more ubiquitous.
Absolutely. And we have a historical lesson there, which is Beacons. Beacons fell down for that friction of like, oh wait, I need this app. I need to go into my settings, turn on Bluetooth, and it just it strangled the whole thing because there was too much opt-in friction. So I think that it also goes back to the separation of the retailers that do it in a customer-centric way versus in a self-serving way. So, for example, 7-Eleven, I believe they've done that in a self-serving way where they really don't care about the payments as a utility. I think they're using that as a Trojan horse to get people to download their app, and then 7-Eleven is on your home screen, which is, of course, very valuable real estate. So for them, I see that more as a means to an end. The folks that I think will actually get people to use it are those that are either big enough to get someone to download their app, like Walmart or Target, as you mentioned, or those that tie in with Apple Wallet or just other, you know, OS-centric tools that are, you know, not necessarily an app but more kind of a functionality at the OS level, where it just kind of happens easily. And I think it's interesting, too, that one trend that I didn't mention, but it goes back to a lot of the things that you said, Damien, at the onset, in terms of some of the functionality, the democratization of functionality that retailers now have at their disposal, is this very interesting area of retail as a service. And just like software as a service came along and democratized a lot of high-end functionality with more kind of palatable price points on a monthly basis and handling everything in the cloud, retail as a service is something that is coming along to do, like if you're a mid-range retailer and you want to do cashierless payments, you want to compete with Amazon Go and be at the forefront, you don't have to do what Amazon did and build this giant system in-house, which of course is cost prohibitive, but there are now players that help you get there. And Standard Cognition is one of them. They actually raised $40 million today. We wrote about them a few weeks ago. But that whole just kind of retail as a service phenomenon, I think, is very interesting in just kind of bringing a lot of these things we're talking about to these retailers in a way that they won't have an excuse like they did a decade ago in terms of like not integrating.
So you could imagine Amazon did something kind of like this with AWS. They could
Exactly.
turn open up their own tools to a marketplace in the way that you're describing. And Google as well ought to be pretty well positioned. I'm thinking of the kind of experimentation that they do with the Pixel phone, where they will release features like visual search that are a little bit bleeding edge. You know, they may be pretty well positioned to offer this sort of thing to businesses as well.
Joe, anything to add on all of that? I think we covered a
Yeah,
lot.
I was wondering, is there research you're aware of, Mike, on how receptivity to AR for this sort of commercial or in-store purpose varies across age segments?
Oh, that is a good question. Now, do you mean for the age of the business or the person in charge of the implementation, or from the consumer, or both, maybe?
For the consumer. So we're talking about barriers to adoption, and I'm thinking, of course, we know Snapchat's super popular with Gen Z and sort of younger millennials. And I'm thinking that sort of age group and the emerging consumer group is very comfortable with AR for entertainment purposes. I wonder how that'll cross over into commercial purposes as like AR in-store and visual search really takes off.
Yeah, that's a good question. Now, there is a adoption patterns that array by generation, and you see the results there that are pretty intuitive. Digital natives are more adoptive of AR in general. At Artillery Intelligence, we do a lot of consumer survey data in partnership with Thrive Analytics, and what we've found is that adoption and receptivity does skew towards younger generations. And also, I think that's like a general comment on newer technologies and adoption patterns. I think with AR in particular, you see more millennial and Gen Z adoption because it is based on the camera. And that is where a lot of millennials live in terms of their affinity for, I think Snapchat probably popularized this, and then it's moved on to Instagram stories and others. But the comfort levels with the camera among these generations, I think, are going to make them more adoptive of things like visual search and the utilities. I think it always starts with things that are more social or fun or gaming, like it did with Pokemon Go, and then moves into more kind of less sexy but more utility and everyday, all day functions like visual search. And I think that those are the age ranges that are certainly going to be kind of the tip of the spear for that.
Yeah, be interesting to see how that develops as the technology gets more popular.
So great. We went over a lot of topics. We're out of time, and that's all the time we have. But I want to thank both of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you all for spending time with us. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Also, stay tuned for lots more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. So I'm Mike Boland. This has been Heard on the Street. Thanks for listening.